Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and we've been talking on the show and interviewing people associated with the new citywide program that hopes to get New Yorkers on the same page, literally. One book, One New York, aims to get New Yorkers to read the same book at the same time. If it works, it could be the biggest community read in the country ever. The first step is to vote on one of the five books, which are nominees, which are Between the World and Me by Ta-Nehisi Coates, The Sellout by Paul Beatty, A Tree Grows in Brooklyn by Betty Smith, and The Brief Wondrous Life of Oscar Wao by Juno Diaz, and the book that we'll now discuss, the novel Americana. It tells the story of a young Nigerian couple, one of whom leaves for England and the other of whom leaves for America. And we have the author of Americana with us, Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie. Such an honor. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you. It's lovely to be back.
Did you want to react at all to the last conversation? I know you were listening.
I was listening raptly. I mean, I think it's interesting to have these conversations and also in some ways important. But I sometimes worry that, what I find myself thinking is the debate about popular culture and feminism, I just find myself thinking, well, what's the harm, really? I think the role of the ultimate goal of feminism is to make itself redundant. So I'm dreaming of a world where we don't actually need to label ourselves feminists because we will have gender equality. And I think to have that, we have to think about feminism more broadly. It can't be a small party to which only a few are invited. It has to be a big, raucous, inclusive party. It has to be, you know, quote unquote, mainstream. And so if it becomes part of popular culture, what's the harm? There are young people who had never even heard that word feminist, who are now grappling with it, and whose understanding of it might, of course, not be perfect, but it's still better than not even having to think about gender equality.
Okay. So imagine you win the competition, and everyone in New York is reading Americana, and people are meeting up to talk about it in book groups. What are we talking about?
I have no idea. No. I suppose love.
That's a good starting place. Well, all right. At one point in the book, for example, someone asks your protagonist about the book she is reading, and she thinks, why did people ask? What is it about? As if a novel had to be about only one thing. And so for you at this moment, 4 years since Americana came out, what are the things it's about? And you're not limited to one answer.
It's about love. It's about leaving home. It's about what home means. It's also about that strange displacement that happens when, and I wanted to write a love story. I wanted to write an old-fashioned, hopelessly, indulgently romantic love story. I wanted to write also about the kind of immigration and displacement that I hadn't really seen a lot of in literature, which is the story of the middle-class and upper-middle-class African character. I think the conception of African immigration is often one that has to do with war and fleeing some sort of catastrophe. But there's so many stories of people who are not starving to death, whose countries are not at war, who probably have jobs, but just want more in that way that human beings have throughout human history, who just sort of dream of more and they leave. And I wanted to write about that strangeness that happens when you've left because you've chosen to leave, and then you're forced to kind of adapt to reduced circumstances because it's a choice you've made and what it does to you in a way.
And the title, Americana, which is the word American plus AH, for people who don't know. I see it's a Nigerian term used for people who've been to the U.S. and come back to Nigeria with American affectations. Is it a derogatory term?
It's a playful term. It's not really derogatory. It's more, it's kind of mildly mocking, but it doesn't have dark intentions. It's playful. And part of wanting to name this novel American, I like to think of it as there's a subtle playfulness. I wanted to write about serious things, but I wanted to have a playful tone to an extent. I wanted also, I forgot to mention, I did very much want to write about race in America and what it means to be a black person who's not a black American. And in some ways, I mined my own experience of discovering race in America. And I wanted to laugh at some of the things. I mean, I obviously think race is a very important subject. And I think the only reason race is important is because of racism. But at the same time, I think that there are many things that are just funny while also being serious.
I get it. Well, here's a clip of you that doesn't have a lot of humor in the interaction. After the election, you were invited on the BBC, as you know, obviously, to participate in a panel with the editor-in-chief of the very conservative American Spectator, R. Emmett Terrell. The two of you argued. It was upsetting to watch. And in this 40-second clip, the host, Emily Maitlis, is asking Terrell to concede that some of Trump's language is racist.
Republicans, even Paul Ryan, have accepted that Trump has been racist in his language. You don't.
That's not true. He hasn't been racist.
Textbook racism is the phrase
he used. Let me tell you.
If you're a white man, you don't get to define what racism is.
Oh, I see.
You don't get to sit there and say that he hasn't been racist when objectively he has. It's not about your opinion. The objective things. Racism is an objective reality, and Donald Trump has inhabited that reality.
Do you know the false consciousness, which is the theory you're talking about, is a Marxist concept. In other words, I can't even open my mouth here because I'm a white male.
No, of course you can. I'm just saying to you that Donald Trump has shown us and has said things that are objectively racist.
No, he has not.
It's not about my emotion.
It's not my emotion, you said at the end of that. Because earlier on in the interview, Terrell had accused you of seeing the election through an emotional lens and ignoring evidence. That probably goes back to our feminism discussion. But are you surprised when people don't see Donald Trump's rhetoric, considering some of the explicit things that he said, as sometimes racist?
I'm not really surprised, because I think being a black person in America is to constantly be told that things that are obviously racist are not. So it doesn't really surprise me. I think it's a willful refusal to see. And I think that gentleman with whom I had the unpleasant conversation, and I do want to say that the BBC had not told me I would be having a conversation with a Trump supporter, otherwise I would not have been there. Because, you know, I very much want to hear the other side, which is why I read a lot of conservative publications, because I want to understand how people see the world differently from how I see the world. But I think that Trump, in particular, I don't want to have debates in which we debate the full humanity of groups of people. I don't think there's a massive arrogance there that I don't want to participate in. So, which is why I didn't want to have that conversation. And of course, it ended up being about, you know, this isn't racist, this is racist. I think something that's so obvious. And I remember thinking that he seemed to have just created another reality that he was living in. I mean, Donald Trump had campaigned, for example, as sort of very America first, very sort of China bashing. And this man starts off by saying that Donald Trump is going to be an internationalist. And I remember thinking, this is so strange. It feels as though that we inhabit two different realities.
I think he and Trump must have inhabited two different realities, because Trump would never call himself an internationalist. But your book, I think you're trying to get people to view the world through multiple lenses, rooting the book in you know, so firmly in two different countries as you do. Is that one of the things that you think might make it good for the One City, One Book program, that there are not only that there are so many immigrants here, but that there are just so many people in the world and, you know, with so many stories and so many backgrounds, and maybe your book can start conversations and start thought processes about multiple ways of viewing the same thing.
Well, if that happened, it would make me happy. But also, I just want to say that obviously I'd be happy to win, but if any of the books alongside mine won, I'd also be happy because I actually really like all of them. And think they're just really, really very good books. Ta-Nehisi, I think, is just wonderful. And Paul Beatty, I'm such a fan of. So, and Juno Diaz, I think, is just sublime. And I actually think that Juno's book, in some ways, is like mine in its sort of insistence on a kind of multiplicity of views. For me, Americana,
which takes place very much in the Dominican Republic and in New Jersey, Juno's
yes,
book.
Yes. Yes, I suppose the answer is yes. The idea of many voices and many ways of looking at the world. My belief is that every view is valid as long as it does no harm. And the fact that, you know, we see things differently. I think I would be very bored with the world if we all saw things in the same way. And I would also be happy if it started a conversation about race. And I mean, it's very easy now to talk about conversations about race, but I mean it in a really in a literal way. How do we talk about race, and even within progressive circles? So in the novel, I have a character who's a white liberal, and every time she talks about black people, she calls them beautiful. So she doesn't say black; she says beautiful. So she says, "Oh, I know this beautiful woman." And in the store, there was a beautiful man who was the cashier, and there's something about it that is very disturbing, because obviously it's well-meaning, but it comes from a deep-rooted discomfort in talking about race, because of course not all black people are beautiful. And so it, for me, the question of, well, how does one talk about race? How does one acknowledge the fact that race is such a central part of the American story?
We're going to continue in a minute with Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie, author of Americana, one of the five books being considered for the One Book, One New York program, which are being voted on. One of those books will be selected by you and a lot of other people to be read, but at the same time by everybody in New York who chooses to participate. We're going to continue with Chimamanda in a minute. And if you have read Americana and always wanted to ask her a question about it or anything else you want to say or ask, now's your chance. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Stay with us. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. By the way, have you heard about our own historical fiction challenge? We're celebrating the genre by challenging you, our listeners, to write your own very short story of historical fiction inspired by one of four real historical audio prompts. We're doing this contest as part of our partnership with the Neighborhood Library Awards. You can find all the details of the contest on our website. Go to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show, and then on the little tab that says Historical Fiction Challenge. The audio prompts are there for you to listen to. These are four pieces of historical news from the WNYC archives that go back decades and decades, and they're really fascinating to listen to whether or not you choose to write a story. Then write a short historical fiction piece, up to 2,000 words, that incorporates one of those four prompts, and email your submissions to blshow@wnyc.org by March 13th. You'll see all the instructions when you go to our website and listen to those archive clips at wnyc.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. We continue with Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie, author of Americana, one of the five books nominated for the One Book, One New York program. And Craig in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi.
I told the screener that I have read two of the five books that have been nominated, but one of them is not the author's, and hers is on my list along with one of the others, so I need a little convincing as to why I should vote for hers, because I really am confused about which one to choose, because I enjoyed the other two books that I read and would be happy having a discussion, but I also would like to be prompted to read one of the books that I haven't.
All right. Do you want to campaign a little, Chimamanda?
There's a reason why, much as I have often thought about it, I know I could never be a politician.
You have to tear down these other authors. Don't say nice things about them. Let me ask you this way. Why should somebody who never heard of your book until this conversation read it, regardless of the competition?
I think it's a good story. I think it's a sort of book that makes you want to turn the page because you want to turn the page, not because you think that you should. And I think that because it's set in different places, so I start off in Nigeria, and the main characters are teenagers, and then we follow her, Ifemelu, to the US, and then Obinze goes to England. And in some ways, the stories of leaving home are very different. And then many years later, they go back to Nigeria. And it's also a story of how Nigeria has changed. It's a story of what it's like in England, of what it's like to be undocumented and kind of trying to make sense of this choice that you've made. And in Ifemelu's American experience, I think it's interesting because it's about discovering race, which even before I came to the US, I hadn't quite realized that it would be part of my own experience, that I hadn't thought of myself as black until I came to America. And in some ways, that's what I've mined to write Ifemelu's story. It's also, I like to think that it's funny. I poke fun at my own tribe, which is sort of the, you know, left-leaning progressive people in America. So I poke fun at, you know, the kind of people who are very concerned about vegetables and fruits that ripen on a truck. Because for Ifemelu, and from her Nigerian perspective, sometimes she thinks there's a lot more going on in the world, and I don't know how to be outraged that you know, these fruits haven't been harvested when they're ripe.
Locally. Nabu in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hi, Nabu.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call. Ngozi, thank you for writing this book. I'm actually not an avid reader, but I will be voting for your book because I'm a Nigerian, haven't been naturalized as yet. I'm born in Nigeria, I'm raised here, and I don't quite fully fit in with the Nigerian, but I yet don't quite fully fit in as an African-American because I'm not. So I straddle that line as well. I'm assuming your characters do, because I, too, did not know I was black until I came to the United States. And I think this book will speak to my experience somewhat, and just for those reasons, I'm going to vote for your book. Thank you.
Well, thank you. I think also just the idea of blackness not being one thing is important. I like to think of that blackness is the sort of overarching thing, that we all have similar experiences and kind of share certain similar traditions. But I like to think of it being also a group of ethnic groups. I mean, I think of African Americans as a different ethnic group, and you know, that blackness isn't a singular thing.
Shawmi in Westchester, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I love your show.
Thank you.
So this is just some thoughts based on what your lovely guest said about her character using the word beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And it's you know, especially with respect to white progressives and talking about race and how to forward the conversation. So one of my little things that I've been thinking about and have talked about, I noticed that black people, white people, always refer to black people as black folks. And the word folks, I think, is inherently racist, because I feel that it lessens an entire race of people to something that's less than a person or people. It's like this vision of sort of, you know, Aunt Jemima or you know, that sort of thing. Like, that's what folks are.
Shomi, I'm going to jump in just because the show's going to end in a minute, and I want you, Amanda, to have an answer. And I know that in your book, one of your observations regards the nuances of language. Like, when people are reluctant to say racist, they say racially charged and things like that. So what are you thinking as you listen to Shomi?
I think that what people choose to call themselves, I think it matters. And so I disagree, because I think that if black people choose to call themselves black folk, I don't think that's racist. I think that language that language is contextual. You know, it's always about context. And so that certain things I say to my friend when we're sort of at home and sort of private, and if a white person said that to me, it would not be okay. Language is always about context. And so the idea of black people calling themselves black folk being racist is not something I agree with.
And we have to leave it there. And I think she was saying that it was about when white people call black folk black people black folk.
I think she said both.
But Shomi, with black people too?
But you know, of course, it's more weighted, of course, when white people say it, in my opinion, and yeah, the way it feels to me.
Thank you. And we do have to leave it there with Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie. Her book is Americana. And listeners, don't forget to cast your vote online for any of the five books, for the one book, One New York City Read, at nyc.gov/onebook, nyc.gov, and then spell it out. It's not the number, the numeral. It's nyc.gov/onebook, or you can vote at digital kiosks that have been set up on the subways. Monday is the deadline. Chimamanda, great to have you on again. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And on Monday's show, we'll talk about one more book that's in the competition, the old classic, A Tree Grows in Brooklyn. Meanwhile, have a great weekend, everyone. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.